we had begun with a few introductions. We had said, A, that in order for testimony to be acceptable, it has to be a dut she'tayachol lehazima, testimony that can become edim zomimim. We defined edim zomimim based on a later mishnah, that edim zomimim are found or are accused of lying by the second set of witnesses who come in and say, Imanu heitem, you were with us at the time you claim you saw whatever you saw. Then we had begun our Mishnah, Keitzad Eidim Nasim Zomimin. Meidinanu, the Mishnah is going to ask a general question. How the witnesses become Eidim Zomimin? And going to give a different answer. The Mishnah says a story. They testify, Meidinanu Bish Ploni. We testify about so-and-so, that he is the son of a divorcee, or a chalutza, a woman whose mother did chalitza. And as such, he is a chalal, a disqualified kohen, a kohen who has lost his holiness, chalal from the term chulin. Ein omerim, we don't say, ye'asaze ben gusha oven chalutza tachtav, that this witness or this pair of witnesses should become chalalim instead of him. Ela lokarbaim, but rather the witness gets 40 lashes. So that's our opening to Masechet Makot. Rashi, et ish ploni kohen, shehu ben gerusha befaneinu nitgarasha imo kodem shenolad, v'arei hu chalal vepasul. So Rashi says the stress of their testimony is, we saw his mother get divorced before he was born. And Rashi on the Rif words it a drop differently. Rashi on the Rif sounds like his father remarried his mother after he divorced her. So that a kohen is prohibited from doing that.
At what point is it that if she was already pregnant when they divorced the first time, though, he's...
Right, so obviously, enough time passed, right, that... because Yehuda Liebenson asked, what is the moment they are testifying about? We said it has to be a ducha teichola hazima, so what's the moment about which the next set of witnesses are saying, you were with us, you did not see what? You did not see the moment of conception, you did not see the moment of the second marriage. So Rashi makes it that the focus of their testimony is we saw the divorce. And it's about that moment that the witnesses are going to say, you were with us, you couldn't have seen the divorce. Okay. So even though that's not the implicating moment, meaning the reason he's a chalal is not because she got divorced, but rather because his father, the kohen, married her or remarried her after the divorce. But nonetheless, the moment they're testifying about, according to Rashi, is b'faneinu nitgarasha imo. We were present when his mother got divorced. So the stress is the moment of divorce. That's the moment about which the Eidim HaMizimim, the second set of witnesses, are going to say, Imanu Hayitem, you are with us. Ein omerim, Rashi, im huzmu v'hen kohanim, we wouldn't say if they were found to be edim zomimim and they are kohanim, ye'asaze ben gerusha v'chalutza, so then they should get that status of being a chalal, l'kayem bo kasher zamam, and then theoretically we would have fulfilled giving them the punishment that they had intended to give the defendant. Ela, but rather what we do is sofeget arbaim, they get 40 lashes, uvegmara mefaresh ta'ama. The Gemara will explain the ta'am. Ta'am could mean reason, ta'am could mean source. Whenever we see ta'am, we shouldn't be quick to assume it means reason. My ta'ama in the Gemara is sometimes what's the source, it's sometimes what's the reason. Next case in the Mishnah. Whenever we see two cases in the Mishnah, we have to understand what the two cases are teaching us. The Mishnah, on the surface, does not seem to have the system we would expect. It begins with a question. What was the question? Ketzad ha'edim na'asim zomimim. What does that mean? How do they become zomimim? They become zomimim because the second pair of witnesses come and say, you were with us. The Mishnah, Lechora, did not answer the question it set out to answer. Next line in the Mishnah.
I'm sorry, what was his point about when there are two cases in the Mishnah?
Each case has to teach me something. If I see two cases, I have to wonder, what was each case teaching me? Our assumption is usually that the format of a Mishnah is going to be Lozu Afzu. That the Mishnah proceeds in an order of not only the first case, but even the second case. In other words, our assumption is that the second case is going to be a greater chidush. Or in the wording of the Gemara, Stam Tana Batra. The assumption is that the later thing quoted in the Mishnah, or the later opinion in the Mishnah, Litifuyeyate, came to add. There are times where the Gemara will say, no, the Mishnah's format is Zuvein Tzarich Lomar Zu. The first case, and I wouldn't even have to mention the second case. The first case encompassed the second case. But that's, we assume that is not the format of the Mishnah, unless we have no other choice. Our assumption is that either each case is a standalone, or the second case teaches more than the first case. Me'idin anu b'ish ploni shu chayav liglot. We testify about Mr. So-and-so, that he is obligated to go into exile, explains Rashi. Sharag et ha'nefesh b'shogeg. He killed someone by mistake, and we will learn in the third chapter of the Masechet all the laws of Galut. So they're testifying, so-and-so must go into exile. We don't say, if they are found to be edim zomimim, that they go into exile instead of him, but rather they get 40 lashes. So our Mishnah began by asking, how do edim become zomimim? And it answered by giving me two cases where I do not inflict upon them the testimony they gave, but rather I give them 40 lashes. Ask the Gemara, ha, this Mishnah should have said, Ketzad ein ha'edim na'asim zomimin mi ba'ele. The Mishnah should have began with the intro. How do witnesses not get what they plotted? Mi ba'ele. That's what needed to be. The word ba'e means need, want, or ask. I recommend that you have, like in the back of your notebook, start a dictionary, and at the end of the week, take time to review keywords. So a key word is ba'e. Ba'e means need, want, or ask. So over here it means it should have said. Ha, this Mishnah, ketzad ein ha'edim na'asim zomimin mi ba'ele. It should have stated how the witnesses not become zomimin, because the definition, it would seem, of edim zomimin, they plot it, and they get what they plotted. And in our Mishnah, they don't get what they plotted. So that's question number one.
Can I ask a question on Rashi and the Mishnah?
Yeah.
Why does Rashi say, in the first case, ein omrim im huzmu vehein kohanim, yasese ben rusha v'chalutza? Only if they're kohanim? Is there no way that we could be mekayim them in the status of halal if they're not kohanim?
Correct. If a person isn't a kohen, he has no psul if his parents are divorced, if his father married a divorcee.
But we can't make him a halal?
No. Halal means he can't do birkat kohanim. Halal means he can't do the...
Now he can't marry a bas kohen, no?
Sure he can.
There's no nafkamina?
I'm unaware of any.
I'm saying it'll make him a halal and his children a halal. Let's say he had a daughter who was a halala, couldn't marry a kohen.
Okay. Theoretically, yeah. You're saying let's invent something. Because there is no such status for Yisrael. So because the Torah says, Asitam lo kasher zamam, the Torah meant invent a status. I'm saying that's a status that doesn't exist for Yisrael to become a halal.
So there's no havamina.
Our assumption is you can't do that. The question is, can we accept the testimony? Meaning, if I can't inflict kasher zamam, then I can't accept the testimony. The testimony must be eidut shatayachol la'azima. So when the Mishnah gives me a solution, give him lashes, what the Mishnah is saying is you can accept the testimony because you have a way of paying him back in case they become eidim zomimin. So the first question the Gemara asked is, that the opening line is questionable. It should have said, how do witnesses not get kasher zaman? The ode.
And when they only called zaman if they actually get the...
Okay, good question. Rashi. Hachi gel sinan. Hai, keitzad ein ha'edim nasim zomemin mi ba'ile. Ve'od, diktani lekaman, aval ameru lahem v'chulu. Keitzad ein ha'edim nasim zomemin mi ba'ile. Dehalo mekaimet behu kasher zamam. You're not fulfilling kasher zamam, so then why are you calling them edim zomemin? The Rashi seems to say, that the Gemara seems to say, that by definition, an aid is called aid zomim, not when he is found to be a liar because they said imanu hayitem, but rather when he gets what he plotted, because otherwise there's no reason to call him an aid zomim.
What is the word zomim? It's like,
in the Torah, it says vasitem lo.
What does the word mean in
kasher zamam? Is he plotted?
Zamam is a plot?
Yeah.
So why does that have anything with them getting their same punishment? Like, is that in terms of the Lashon?
Because we began last time by saying we have all kinds of scenarios where witnesses can contradict one another.
Okay.
And yeah. And then there are edim makhishim. There are edim that contradict. And the assumption is that the uniqueness of this is two things. Number one, that I believe the second witnesses as opposed to the first ones. I don't just say I have no idea who's telling the truth. Ordinarily, under edim makhishim, when two witnesses contradict one another, so I say, I don't know who's telling the truth, I can't do anything, I'm stuck.
Okay.
Over here, I'm saying, I believe the second set, and I'm going to punish the first set. So, okay. That's a factor in edim zomimin, that's a unique factor to edim zomimin. But the other unique factor is that when I punish them, I give them what they plotted to do against the defendant.
Okay.
And Rashi and the Gemara seems to say that you can't... You're forcing me to take a few steps forward. Let's take those steps forward.
Okay.
We asked, when the Mishnah says, Keitzad ha'edim nasim zomimin, so we asked, l'chora, the answer should have been, when the next set of witnesses walk in and testify against them, that's how they become zomimin.
Okay.
Right? The Mishnah doesn't even address the second set of witnesses. So then by default, the Gemara understands the Mishnah's question to be, how do I apply kasher zamam to witnesses that have a complexity, such as when they testify he is halal, or they testify he must be exiled. So the Gemara already understood in the Mishnah that the question was not, how do they become edim zomimin? Because the answer doesn't answer that question at all. The only question that the answer really answers is, how do I inflict on them a punishment when I cannot give them what they plotted? We don't yet know why we can't, but we know that we can't. So then the Gemara is saying, so then the wording is not right.
Okay.
The wording should have been, this is how witnesses do not get what they plotted. How do witnesses nonetheless become edim zomimim, even though they won't get what they plotted?
Okay. So if I think like that, but why is it they were saying that we don't know, even from the Mishnah, it seems that we would know why they wouldn't be able to get what they plotted, no?
We don't know what the reasoning is.
Right.
Why not?
You say Kohen, yeah, fine. Okay.
Ve'od, second question. When the Gemara asks two questions, sometimes the Gemara answers only one of them. So we have to hold on to pay attention whether the Gemara answered both or not. Tosas writes in a few places that the Gemara didn't bother answering the other question. So whenever the Gemara asks two questions, we pay attention. Did the Gemara answer both? Ve'od, and further, midiktani lekaman. We have a Mishnah later on that actually describes how they become edim zomimin. The Mishnah later on is going to say, אבל אמרו להם איך אתם עדים שרי באותו היום, אתם הייתם ממנו במקום פלוני. The Mishnah says, you want to know how you have edim zomimin? If the second set of witnesses say, how can you testify on the day you claim you saw this, you were with us in such and such a place, you couldn't have witnessed this. הרי אלו זומימין. That is how they become edim zomimin. So, you ask a question, And the Mishnah down the road is going to answer that question. How do they become Zamamin? I'll tell you how they become Zamamin when a second set of witnesses come in and testify. So what's this Mishnah asking a question which the Mishnah later on is going to answer? Rashi, the Od, Mai kabaita na keitzad nasin zomimin, haktani la lekaman. What's the Mishnah asking? Mai kabae. Again, the word bae over here means ask. Remember, we said bae means need, want, or ask. Mai kabae tana. What is the Tana asking? Keitzad nasin zomimin. How do they actually become edim zomimin? Haketani la lekaman. Keitzad din zomimin. The Mishnah later on will actually define how halachically it plays out that they become edim zomimin. Diktani b'manitin. The Mishnah says, Aval amerulem amezimin. If the second set of witnesses say to the first set, Heyachatem meidin heidut ze. How are you testifying this testimony? Valo hayitem imanu oto ayom. B'makom ploni chulu. But you were with us on that day in such a place. So we asked two questions. Question number one is, the question of the Mishnah doesn't match the answer. Question number two is, the question of the Mishnah is actually answered later on. Why does the Mishnah ask it here? So the Gemara comes to answer. Tana hatam kai. The Tana of our Mishnah is continuing from the Mishnah in the end of Sanhedrin. Okay, so the Mishnah in the end of Sanhedrin says like this: Kol azomimin makdimin lo tamita. When edim zomimin, when witnesses testify that so and so deserves the death penalty, so then they can expect that they will get the same death penalty they were trying to inflict on the defendant. If they try to get him chenek, they'll get chenek. Skila, skila, sreifa, sreifa. We have four forms of death penalty. Skila, sreifa, herek, chenek. Stoning, burning by the knife, by the sword, and strangulation. And if they tried to inflict any one of those four on someone, and they were found to be zomimin after the court ruled he should get the death penalty, then they will get the same death penalty they tried to impose.
Is there a concept, like, I know in modern law today, like, there's certain crimes you have, like, a range of what the punishment can be. Like, if somebody's speeding, for example, they can get a ticket up to however many dollars or shekels, whatever it will be. Is there, like, a concept like this, like, in Judaism is, like, you get this law, and if you transgress, there's only one punishment that can be? Like, when these idiom are coming and they're saying, this guy did this, so therefore the punishment has to be this?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
Meaning, for our purposes, yes. We see in the Gemara that the application of the death penalty within a range can be different. Meaning, the Gemara says, when the Torah says the punishment is burning, you could put a person, put him on a stick and build a fire around him and burn him to death. And that would be the fulfillment of the mitzvah of the Torah. But bro lo mita yafa, the Talmud says, if you take molten lead and pour it down their throat, that also burns them to death. But it's a much quicker and less painful death. And so the Gemara says, we always, the Talmud analyzed every form of the death penalty in the Torah, and the Talmud came up with the least painful form of execution to fulfill the mitzvah. So from that Gemara we see that even though the Torah gives us a defined death penalty, one of the four, the application of that definition is up to interpretation. And if a court did one of the other forms of the same death penalty, technically they fulfilled the mitzvah. They also were in transgression of the mitzvah, you should love your fellow man. The Talmud says, the rabbis analyzed down to the question of would a person rather be executed with clothing on or clothing off? If the execution will go quicker with clothing off, does he prefer the shame of standing naked in front of other people, or does he prefer to take another second to die? And the Talmud analyzed every aspect of the death penalty to minimize the suffering of the person being killed. But you see that there were other ways of doing the same death penalty, which would also be a fulfillment of the death penalty. So in that sense, there was a range. But the actual application, which of the four death penalties, that's written in the Torah.
Okay, but even outside the death penalty, like for example, like we're talking about the halal thing here, I don't know if there's, maybe it's not going to be a good example there, but maybe like something else where they come and say, okay, well, this guy did this, so maybe his punishment is he's going to have to talk a monetary thing, he has to pay twice the dues. Maybe we can work it out that he'll pay, I don't know, something else. Like, does someone have to come in with like a specific thing, or everything, every transgression is going to have its particular transgression then?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what they're thinking the punishment is going to be, it's already lined out. So you know, if they did this crime, this is what they're going to get. It's
not generally, yes. Okay. We're about to see the exception to that.
Yeah, okay.
The general assumption is yes. The Gemara is now going to give us a case where they're testifying about a girl who committed adultery, and the girl is the daughter of a Kohen. So in that case, her punishment is more severe than the adulterer's punishment. And then the question is, can they say, well, we weren't focused on her. We wanted him to get the lighter death sentence. Which death penalty do we give them? Ordinarily, we say whatever they tried to inflict, that's what they receive. What about a case where they were doing two things? They were inflicting one form of death penalty on the adulterer, chenek, and another form of death penalty, a more severe form of death penalty, on the girl, sreifa. Do they still get the more severe one? Or can they say, you're supposed to give me what I plotted. I was plotting against the guy. The girl was collateral damage. That wasn't the focus. That's the Mishnah and Sanhedrin. That's where we find an exception. So the Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin tells us, Kol hazomimin makdimin lo tamita. Whenever witnesses are found to be edim zomimin, they will get the death penalty they were trying to impose on the defendant. Chutz mizomimei bat kohen uvala. The exception is the daughter of a kohen who committed adultery. Or they're saying she committed adultery, so then she and the adulterer, well, she was going to get sreifa, because it says, "Uvat ish kohen ki techel liznot et avia hi mechalelet ba'esh tisarev." The Torah gives us an exception, that although ordinary adultery gets chenek, this adultery gets sreifa, but the man still gets chenek. He did regular adultery. She's the one that did a more severe adultery. She'en makdimin lo tamita. So these witnesses do not get the more severe death penalty. Ela lemita acheret. They get the other death penalty. In other words, even though they were trying to give a more severe death penalty to the girl, we say they have an out. They can say we were trying to do something else to the guy. This is derived from a pasuk. This isn't just that they could make the claim. The Gemara derives from the pasuk, "Vasitem lo kasher zaman nasot la'achiv." So the Gemara derives la'achiv velo la'achoto. That in this case, where there's a brother and a sister involved, meaning a fellow male Jew and a fellow female Jew, they're testifying about the kohenet and the adulterer. So in this case, they can get only his punishment. So that's the Mishnah in the end of Sanhedrin. In the end of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says,
what's a Kohen himself get? It's also just strangulation?
Yeah. The Mishnah itself says, ordinarily kasher zama means the witnesses get what they were plotting on giving, and there's an exception. There's a circumstance where even though they were plotting to give a more severe death penalty to one of the defendants, they will get the lighter death penalty. Coming off of that Mishnah comes our Mishnah and says, you thought that was something. That was just a description of getting the death penalty, the lighter of the two. Here I have another case where they don't get what they were planning on giving altogether. They get something completely different. And that's where our Mishnah comes in. And we will pick up here, B'ezrat Hashem, tomorrow morning.